Welcome.
I have nothing in my cart because it's all in there.
Because you can today.
Because, no, I can't. Well, never. Yeah, so I will toast you.
We're going to cheers you. Okay.
We're going to cheers you.
Welcome, Dara.
Welcome.
Cheers.
Aren't we lucky to have the wonderful Dara? Dara Dance, Dara.
Aren't I lucky to be here with the two of you?
Oh no.
Sorry.
We started early. We're allowed. We've got Irish grannies. Darling, what a lovely treat.
I hope it is.
Oh,
yeah.
I reckon.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
We talked ages ago about you coming along to chat with us and generally because you're up to so many amazing things in and around St Leonard's. Mm. And then I did a little bit of a Google on you. Dara O'Leary. And it wasn't a typewriter, but anyway. And there you were, with like this amazing reel with all these incredible things that you've done before being here. And that was part of the reason also that I was like, hang on a minute, we've got to have a proper chat about where you're at, what you've been doing, and how you managed to choreograph, pull together all of these different people to make shapes with their bodies to time, in time, together. And all the other things, because it's not just that, is it? It's just so much more
that goes into that work. We've been there, haven't we?
Yes.
Been there. We've been in your presence when you've been choreographing.
Oh, yeah. I've been to your...
Yeah, me too.
I've been to shows that you've put on, and also to Dara Dance, your collaboration with AfriColab. And it's just joy. It's just pure joy, moving your body and not really caring about
how... terrifying joy, though, to be fair.
It is terrifying joy as well.
And I say that because there's so much to remember for me, and that's not for everybody. I see people... So AfriColab, as you're all aware, is... because you've all been watching, is down on our wonderful seafront at Marine Court. And when you're up the front and you're going, OK, so 5, 6, 7, 8, or whatever you're calling it at... And I see people go, oh, and they pick it up like that.
Very quick, yeah.
I'm watching the Dallas Cowboy, the American Sweethearts on Netflix, and women they're just picking it up. Guys picking it up, and I think that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But being in there and following that, for me, was terrifying until I allowed myself to enjoy it, and then all of a sudden it becomes a very interesting story.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You can follow choreography. Anyone can follow it.
Yeah.
And you're so good at it.
Oh, thanks. No, I think the most interesting people to watch to dance are non-professionals. And I think you get the most kind of honest, pure, interesting versions of choreography from like people who haven't like trained their bodies to be in a particular way.
Sure.
And there's lovely like transition that like can happen in the Dara Dance class and also in a lot of my work where you just see like people, it's kind of invisible where there's this like transfer where people start to take ownership of it in whatever way feels like possible for them.
Yeah.
And you just go, there you go.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's like a surrender.
It is a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like any muscle, I think, like, you know, if you don't practice reading, you get bad at reading. It gets like difficult and tricky to kind of follow the words on the page. And you go, I'm tired now. I'm tired. I want to stop. So I find that's like with dance, whether you're a beginner or somebody's been doing it for a while, there's like a little bit of like, ugh, how do I get into this? How do I like connect my body? I still have it, like these like brilliant moments where particularly like if I'm upside down, I know that sounds weird, but like if you're like hanging upside down over your legs and you're like looking at the world from like a different perspective and you think very few people in the world get to do that every day in their life. Sure. They just don't. The majority of people just like either like walk to work, walk back from work, sit in the car, sit in seats like this.
Yeah.
And this is sometimes like the extent of what they do with their bodies.
Yeah. All day.
Yeah, yes. All day.
And then bed. And then all day the next day. And then it's like, I'm aching.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you need to get upside down.
Yeah, good one. Upside down, like, yeah, just
inverted,
like, yeah,
poses, like in yoga.
Yeah,
you're you're inverted. It's so your heart's working in a different way.
Yeah,
your blood is all going to your head.
Mm. Yeah, things are just like shifting around, and sometimes like moving your body doesn't even have to be as like big or extreme as that.
Mm.
Just like being aware of touch, like just this, bringing your hands together and just really, really focusing on like the connection between your skin and your skin.
Yeah,
that's something the majority of people can do with very, very little effort. Or it doesn't have to be like something where you're going, I am going to a dance class and I'm going to move my body.
Yes.
You can connect to your body.
I must be in time and I must do it this way. And oh my God, I just messed up and I don't know my left from right, which is me.
But that's getting out of your head, isn't
it?
Into your body.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I work as a choreographer and I work as a movement director. So within like the Dara dance class that I do, that'd be choreography. Yeah. So it's like set steps to set counts to like the set times that they happen.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a framework that you have to kind of put yourself into.
Sure.
But then as a movement director, it's not like the complete opposite of that, but it's more about like, what are the stories that our bodies tell?
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's like on a stage in the theatre or like every day like this, where we're sat around.
Yeah.
Just right now, like people will watch us and they will look at us and they will decide what story we are telling. Just based on the way we're carrying our bodies, the way we're sat, like our relationship to each other right now, the way the two of you are sat there in relation to me, in relation to the camera. It's all telling a story.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's a lot of the stuff that happens kind of unconsciously in our lives. The like the unwritten, unspoken social rules that go into all of the interactions that we make. So as a movement director, it's about just analysing and looking at the stories that a body is telling, and whether, and a lot of it is in relation to a script. Like the script is asking a particular thing. Is your body telling that story?
Yeah,
or is it deliberately telling a different story to tell, to not to confuse, but
a
to
subtext,
say,
maybe.
Yeah, a subtext, all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's not necessarily about like big, huge in time movements, but it's sometimes like the really small
little subtle things.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's I love when you watch a play and there are players around the edge, but they're all engaged in some way as well.
Mm.
And if they're not, if someone's looking off, unless it's a nativity play, in which case that's just adorable and funny when everyone's looking everywhere.
Yes.
And you know, that's so cute. Yeah. But in a you know, in a theatrical performance, just watching how engaged the other people are with the story helps to hold the story, I think, as well.
Yeah.
I was wondering for you what started it all off, you know, as you know, when you were a child, or was there something in particular that brought you to where you are now in terms of the things that get you fired up?
Well, there's no like real history of like theatre or performance in our family. I guess the closest thing is that my granddad, he was a harp maker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
So there is that like music,
like
lineage.
Yeah.
But nobody really was on stage in our family. But growing up, my parents put us into music and to speech and drama.
Well done.
Yeah. So like these brilliant extracurricular activities, particularly like the speech and drama, which was about like building confidence. Being comfortable with speaking out loud in front of other people. And so, did that for, I can't remember when we started. It was like, maybe 7 or 8.
Mm.
And I played classical violin as well up until the age of 16.
Amazing, wow.
Which I was a really good sight reader.
Oh yeah, great.
And once my teacher like clocked on to that, they were like, you're not practicing, are you? And I'm like, but I don't need to. I can come into the class and just like play the pieces.
Wow.
And she was like, no, you need to practice.
Oh.
I was like, oh. I was like, okay, you need to practice for an hour every day.
Mm.
And I started to do it. And then there was auditions for a local panto in Cork, which is where I'm from. And so I went along and there was like a dance audition. And they taught the routine. I did it. I was like, oh, I can do this. And then I got into the panto and did the panto, and they would like teach different dance routines. And I was thinking, oh, I can do this quite easily.
What was it? What panto was it?
I think it was Cinderella. Uh-huh. There's a company in Cork called CADA Productions, and they're linked to a stage school called CADA, so that's Cork Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Cool.
And so after I finished the panto, I thought, I want to do more of this. So yeah. I joined CADA.
Uh-huh.
And started doing some, I think, like weekly dance classes.
Mm-hmm.
And again, thinking, oh, I can do this quite easily. So then I started doing more. I think I maybe started doing about 2 or 3 classes a week.
Mm.
And dropped violin because I thought, this is too hard. I want to do the thing that's easy.
Yeah.
And this thing that I'm kind of picking up quite easily.
Yeah.
So like prior to that, I hadn't really danced at all.
Mm.
And then I just started to do more and more and more. Mm. And
what kind of dance was it? Just all sorts of different styles?
It was jazz and tap.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and I'd never done any ballet and didn't do any ballet at the time.
Mm.
But I was still in school. So I was like about to do my leaving cert, which is the equivalent of A levels over here.
Yes, yeah.
And I applied to do food sciences at a university in Cork, or applied biology and chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my brain was, like full science brain.
Yeah.
Or there was a full-time dance course, full-time foundation dance course as well in Cork.
Oh my goodness.
A place called Coláiste Stiffón Naofa. That's the Irish name for the college.
Yeah.
And they had a foundation dance course. And I got my course, the applied biology and chemistry course. I got the dance course and chose the dance course.
Wow. Fork in the road.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
It kind of was, but it wasn't.
Mm. Yeah.
It wasn't, I knew where I was going.
Right, mm. Yeah.
But like in Ireland, most people stay in school until the leaving cert. Mm. That's just what you do.
Yeah.
And you just apply for university. That's just what you do.
Mm.
And so I just kind of went along with it, but at the same time kind of going, I'm going to go in that direction.
Yeah.
So started that full-time dance course, and I was like dancing Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. That was a shock to the system.
Yeah.
To your body.
Yeah. Like doing a ballet class every single day, every single morning.
Tons.
Yeah. And there's a brilliant...
It's quite unnatural, a lot of it, isn't it?
It is. That is the thing about ballet. It's like forcing you into positions that your body doesn't naturally want to sit into. Mm. There's a lot of like rotation outwards.
Yeah.
Where we naturally sit in this like kind of...
Mm.
It's like neutral parallel position.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of a dancer called Bob Fosse?
Yes!
So Bob Fosse created that like dance style because his body did not want to turn out.
Exactly.
So his body
and that's
naturally...
what made him so attractive to so many people. He had such a ball.
Yeah.
And when you watch anything that Bob Fosse has choreographed, it all feels so... It undulates.
Yeah.
He's an undulating. Mm. Whereas ballet always, to me, looks like it's contorting.
Mm.
It's a very different anti-body, whereas Bob Fosse was pro-body. Mm.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's all of that. It's like you watch it and you go, oh, yes.
I can feel that.
You
can
feel it
when
you're watching it.
I can do that. And you feel yourself doing it when you watch Bob Fosse.
Mm. Mm.
Anything Bob Fosse, I can feel my shoulders because he's very sort of... He's like liquid in dance.
Yeah.
He's just so, and you just feel like
beautiful.
It's so natural.
Is it like a beautiful sensuality to it?
Yeah.
Like to the bodies, the male and the female bodies.
Absolutely.
But like ballet for me at the time, like starting that and continuing it, was such like a brilliant and solid base for my dance technique.
Yeah. Were you 18 then when you started?
Yeah.
About that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I did that for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And I knew that I wanted to go to a college in London.
Mm.
But I hadn't like had enough training at the dance course yet to be able to apply.
Okay. Yeah.
So the following year, when I was starting my second year, I decided like, yes, I want to apply.
Mm.
But I was met with resistance by the course leaders.
Oh, okay.
At that time, like one of them said to me, "You're not tall enough. You're not flexible enough. You won't get into these colleges."
They'd be looking for a type.
Well, that's what they said, and then in my head, I said, "Fuck you."
Yeah.
I'm going to prove you wrong.
Quite right.
And I left that course, I applied to one place, Lane Theatre Arts.
Mm-hmm.
I got it with a scholarship.
Well done.
And then the following September, I went there and did like 3 years of the most incredible training.
Wow. Where in London was that?
It's just outside of London. It's in Surrey. It's in Epsom, in Surrey.
Oh, right. Okay.
And famously, Victoria Beckham went there.
Did she? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that is famous.
Yeah.
Now it's double famous.
Yeah.
You went there too?
Yes. But it trains you so well to be like so resilient and to be quite ambitious. Mm. And also like when I hit my third year and we started auditioning for shows, because that's the path you're on. Cool. You train to audition for musical theatre and dance productions. Mm. There was something about like being in an audition room and you feeling like you are the best.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was like part of the training.
That's huge. Yeah.
Just where...
embedded.
Yeah. Mm. Just...
I like that.
Yeah. Mm. I deserve this job. Mm. Just... this is a formality. You just need to give me the job.
Well, instead of that chronic insecurity that people have when they go for shows, and it's like, and it's all bravado. And, and of course, the director can pick that up as soon as you go into an audition. Mm. Whereas if that's embedded, that's a skill.
And that's also part of, and I know this on reflection, like my privilege of like training there as being a man, being a white man. I got a lot of... a lot of opportunities while I was in my training, so that like built my confidence, I know, so that when I went out to audition, I was just like, well, of course I'm going to get these jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But in my year, I think there's about maybe 50 odd people in the year. Not everybody had the same opportunities as me.
No. Yeah, I was going to ask about what your compatriots, colleagues, learners were like, how it changed the aspirations, say, from Cork to then going across the water and to London. What kind of what was that like for others?
I loved it because I now had people that I could kind of like look up to and aspire to and go, I want to be like you. Mm-hmm. And I want to do it like that.
Nice.
And I'd like people in the years above me that would like inspire me to like just work harder, dance harder, be better.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the big shift. Mm. Whereas in Cork, it was like, oh yeah, we're kind of...
middling.
Yeah.
Mm.
But now I had
that's stretchy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Going into that aspirational work, always surround yourself with people that are better.
Yeah.
Gives you some juice, doesn't it?
And that's even something like that happens in my work today, I think.
Nice.
If I'm... I like to say yes to things, but I want to say yes to something if... you know, I'm in the environment with people that I feel like I'm going to learn from or I'm going to be stretched by. Absolutely. Or inspired by.
Yeah. Yeah.
That stuff I find still so important, even now.
Yeah. Keeps you juicy.
It does. Mm. It does. It keeps me in this industry because this industry is bloody hard.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
There's a bit of like being in the moment of like I'm working on the thing now, but I'm also like having to plan the thing that's coming next because I'm freelance. I've always been freelance. There's the only person that's like paying my sick pay is me.
Mm-hmm.
The only person that's paying my holiday pay is me.
Absolutely.
So I'm always having to like simmer that thing there, spin that plate there. And there's a lot of like trust that I have to put into myself and faith in myself.
Yeah.
That like there's times where I'll just pull up my CV and go, you've done this, you've done this and this and this, you're
that's
fine.
A good practice.
That is a good idea, yeah.
And
yeah,
it's also a bit really of like, cool. Oh, remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that?
Always.
Do you know what I do actually? If I'm feeling not down, or like if there's like a really challenging job or like a challenging something professionally. I worked on the ceremonies of London 2012. So I'll stick on the opening ceremony, watch that and go, that was a good time, wasn't it?
Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, what?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's a really important thing to go back and review. Because we get up the ladder and how many steps have we actually taken to get this far? And each of those steps is a job. Each of those steps is a triumph. Each of those steps is something to recognise. This is my body of work.
Yes.
And it's like going back over old reports of any kind of feedback.
Yeah.
And I get teachers to do that. I used to do that a lot when we were in training and saying, go back and look at some of the work you've done.
Yeah.
Mm.
And when someone reminds you, Chris did this last week.
Yeah.
Chris said, oh, we were on so-and-so. And then we suddenly realised, oh my gosh, we did this together and we did this together. Oh,
yeah.
Another body of work I've completely forgotten about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it all adds grist to the mill, doesn't it? And
absolutely.
Helps you, strengthens you.
Mm.
Yeah, it's all part of you.
Yeah, and it's all part, I think, like the gratitude as well for absolutely. Kind of, you know, this is the work I've put into my body of work.
Absolutely.
And I'm grateful to, like, to continue to work as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because not that you're only as good as your last job, but there is a little bit of that.
Mm.
So it kind of helps, like, motivate propel. You as well and yeah. propel you forward,
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah. There is also, to your work that I've observed here, a deep kindness and mm. care around the people that you're working with.
Mm.
And also in the way that you demonstrate self-care. I think one of the first times we had a conversation, you said, you didn't say, what have you been doing today? You said something like, what did you do today that made you feel great? I think that was what you asked me, and I was like, ah, oh. You know, that was like a real conversation opener, and I'd treated somebody doing massage, and they'd had a really kind of trippy experience with it, and and we were suddenly on a level in our conversation that you just don't...
Well, we went deep.
You know, yeah, we went deep immediately, which was just so also lovely, rather than sitting on the surface and, you know, skimming along. And certainly with the Hero's Journey that you did with Africola, that collaboration... There was so much care put into how to work with everybody within that setting, and that really resonated with me. So I just wondered about how the self-care journey was for you. How did that emerge, or what would your advice be?
I think it's not always been like that because, like, my training particularly was just like put up and shut up.
Grueling.
Right.
And just get on with it.
Okay.
The show must go on.
Swallow it and just do it. Yeah.
Your legs
hanging
off.
Okay.
Just get up on that stage and keep going.
Gaffer type love. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And so that like permeates into everything.
Mm.
Like it's like mildly toxic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I performed for about 10 or 11 years. And a lot of that was like West End Musical Theatre and also some like touring shows as well. So I was in the machine of like auditioning, getting a job, auditioning, getting a job, and you know, having a great time.
Yeah.
A really, really great time. One of the shows I did Mamma Mia, I did the international tour, and for 2.5 years toured the world.
Wow.
Like from like Asia to South Africa and Europe in between. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. But I remember the consequence of that particularly, like when I came back, it was like, oh, where are my friends? Yeah. Oh, they're off doing other things with other people. But you should have been here waiting for me.
Yeah.
That was like one moment of going, oh, I can now see what it's like if you don't kind of, if you're out of your kind of your familiar, your community.
You don't maintain those connections.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do if you're on a crazy schedule. Of
Yeah.
Just another plate to spin.
Yeah. So that was like one moment. And I stopped performing. It was around like 2010, 2011. And that was because I'd auditioned for two original West End shows. I'd been through like many, many recalls for both, all at the same time. I was feeling really good about them both. I was thinking, ooh, I might get one, if not both. And then I'd have to choose. How brilliant. I didn't get either of them.
Oh.
It was devastating.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm going to give this a break for a while.
Right.
So I stopped, like, performing, for 6 months, and that just continued. And then I moved into, like, I started assisting some different choreographers, and I thought, no, I want to do my own thing. I want to not be in charge, but I want to, like, do my stuff, do
creatively,
my work.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, I think, in 2012, I worked on the opening and closing of the Olympics and Paralympics. In London, and that was like my first, I think, taste of working with like volunteer or community performers.
Love it, yeah.
And yes, it was in a big scale.
Yeah.
Like some of the, we call them segments, like the different parts of the show would have up to like 1,500 volunteers.
Yeah.
But the only way to make something work is by like being able to speak to the individual.
Yes.
Yeah. And we were a team of 29, and we were like spread across the entire entire show. Speaking to the individual, finding out what they needed in that moment, whatever the need was, and if you couldn't address it then, it was like, I'm just going to write this down.
I'll
try my best to like address it, fix it, find out the answer, but I will come back to you. So that was the start of like kind of going, oh, see the individual in front of you, like speak to the individual in front of you, find out like what they need. This is all like on reflection. I'd like started to do that. And I think like the big, big shift was probably when I moved down here 4 years ago. Yes. Yeah, 4 years ago. And I think it's like maybe the 1st of August. It'll be 4 years. Oh. And
happy birthday coming up.
I know. Happy St. Leonard's birthday.
Yeah.
And it was like a big shift for me personally. I think I've done like 20 years in London. Mm. And like a lot of people during the pandemic, I needed to change something in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, moving here, I thought I want to live and work in the same place as much as possible.
I feel that.
And I was
it's
like,
really important to work on your manner.
I didn't know how I was going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea how I was going to do it. Because traditionally, a lot of my work, like even as a choreographer, movement director, took me away to places. So it took me, even though I like lived in London, I rarely worked in London, if not ever.
Mm-hmm.
It always took me to other places. And then I'd come back and go, oh, where's everybody? Well, they're off doing their things.
Where's home?
Yeah, where's home?
Yes.
Where's home?
That is a weird thing, isn't it? It's that unrooted feeling of now I don't know where I am, and it's an identity issue you can really struggle with.
Yeah. So that was the I don't know why or how I had that idea of I want to live and work in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even really know this place.
Yeah, how did you come across it? Or what was the story of...
Why did you pick it?
It's my friend, Kate Gollidge, who's a director.
Love Kate Gollidge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She had moved down here about 3 or 4 years before I did.
Okay.
Because she had a child with her husband and her family live in and around here.
Right, okay.
And did the thing of, I need a village around me.
Absolutely.
Also because Kate is a freelance director, her husband Jimmy is a freelance lighting designer, so needed that family to support
the way of life. Yeah, yeah.
So I'd come down to visit, and each time I'd come down, like, Kate would be the ultimate tour guide.
Of course,
you know,
absolutely.
Go down George
She's
Street.
Always showing someone around.
Yeah.
Every time you see Kate out, it'd be like, oh, this is my friend from, this is my friend. And you go, they're going to be here, aren't they?
Come on.
They're going to be destined to be.
And that's what, like, she'd always say to me, you'll move here one day.
Yeah.
I know you will. And I was like, of course I won't. I live in London.
Everyone in London says the same thing.
Yeah.
They're quite resistant, aren't they?
Yeah.
A Londoner.
Yeah. London has everything I need.
Yeah.
It didn't.
No.
So, it was around like the second lockdown. And prior to that, I'd been living with my brother. He moved back to Cork. We had a house together. We sold the house. He moved back to Cork and I moved in with some friends because I was thinking, I'm lost. I don't know where to move to.
Mm-hmm.
That first lockdown was lots of fun
for
me and other people.
Mm-hmm.
I know it wasn't for lots of other people. Mm-hmm. And then the second lockdown came around Christmas and winter.
Mm-hmm. That wasn't as nice. No.
This is awful.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We're trying our best here in this flat, but there's 4 of us in a 3-bedroom flat. We're really, really trying. But, you know, it's tough and we're acknowledging it's tough.
It's close quarters. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought, I need to make a life change and I need to make it quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Well, there was also the reality of, so when you're freelance and trying to get a mortgage, they look at your last 3 years of accounts.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
To see whether or not you can get a mortgage.
Yeah.
And I thought, if this goes any further, then they're going to be looking at like my accounts from pandemic, another year of pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be screwed.
Mm-hmm.
I am not going to be able to get a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like that as well. There was like this like time sensitive thing of going, I'm also 46.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting older.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of the things were like kind of not on my side. So that was like also part of like...
Are
the
you 50?
No, I'm 46.
Oh, you're 46 now?
So I am now.
You are now? I was going to say you're never 50. Sorry, I sounded like my granny there.
You're never 50.
Come on.
Yeah, I was 42.
You were 42,
so,
yeah.
Like, the chance of getting a mortgage become even harder as you get to your 40s. And as a single person as well.
Yeah.
So that was part of the, like, make a decision, make a decision fast. I thought, could I move to Hastings? I remember that day that Kate took me up the King's Road in St. Leonard's. That was quite nice.
Yeah.
Maybe I took you to St. Leonard's. Get on right now.
Yes, yeah. Well?
I viewed one proper date and that's where I am now.
Wow. And you fell in love.
Yeah.
You know when it's right, don't you?
Yeah. And then, so the other person I knew was the partner of Anna Maria, who runs Africola.
Dan Hope.
So Dan, I had done, I think, maybe like 4 pantos with. Where's the choreographer?
I know you're Dan, human.
Up in Ipswich.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that the rock and roll one?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I knew Dan. And I remember, like, a couple of years prior to, like, moving down here, it was like, yeah, we put in an offer on a house in this place called St. Leonard's. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, yeah, that's near where Kate lives, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
You know, joining up all of the dots.
Yeah.
So Dan was somebody else I knew when I'd moved down here. And I remember, like, bumping into him and Anna down in George Street one time at a pub going, oh, hello, nice to meet you. Nothing else.
Yeah.
And when I first moved down, this is all, like, a long-winded way of getting to, like, how do you take care of people when you're working?
I love it.
Yeah. It's a we're halfway around. Yeah, it's good.
I don't know if we're halfway. And it's to do with the thing of living and working in the same place as well.
Sure.
So when I moved into my flat, it didn't have any hot water.
Mm.
And it didn't have any hot water for weeks.
Oh.
And it was the end of the summer. So I was like, okay, I can swim in the sea today.
Yeah.
But like, I do need a shower.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Dan said, look, pop around anytime you want to have a shower. And I did go around for a shower. And Anna was like kind of busying around in the house. She was like, yeah, I need to go out because I need to open up the shop.
Mm.
So what do you mean, what's the shop? I said, oh, it's this place, Africola, down on the seafront that I opened up with Lily a few months ago.
Yeah,
Lily's her sister. She said, pop down later if you want. So I, went down to the shop that afternoon. And within, like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, we had decided I was going to be doing dance classes there.
Yeah.
Like chatting to Lily. Lily just went like,
she's infectious, isn't she?
She just sparked.
Let's do a class. I said, where? Here.
Absolutely.
What do you mean? She said, we stack all of the things away, and we can do, like, we can do the class here. And Anna was there as well. And Anna tells me this story now. She didn't tell me it at the time, but she said, I knew that, like, when we were chatting, when we met then, she was like, I knew that we were going to make some work together. We were going to make some shows together.
Sure.
Yeah.
She said, I didn't want to tell you because that would probably overwhelm you and scare you. But I just knew when we met, we were going to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, like, that, like, started, like, my journey of working with Anna and Lily, and just, and this is how I, like, learn about and, like, have adapted my way of working. It's being in relation to other practitioners and seeing how they do it.
Yes.
Yeah. You go, oh, you can do it this way.
Mm-hmm. You can swim like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
can ask people what they need.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The thing is, though, you have to act on it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, really, like, worthwhile and embedded participation and community work,
yeah.
the stuff that, like, really matters,
yeah.
it takes a lot of time.
It does.
And it takes a lot of effort.
Well, especially when you open that door of what do you need, because
yeah.
when you're so used to directing and telling people what you need from them,
yeah.
you control it. But if you start asking people what do you need, it becomes a very different story, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Well done you for doing it.
Yeah.
And it's work that's, like, ongoing, because like people show up in different ways
yes.
every day.
Yeah, like, well, the door opens and something else might fall out first
yeah.
and you've got to deal with that before you yeah. can do the work.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful way of thinking about how to navigate practice.
Mm.
Yeah.
Creating and practice. And being prepared for it to, like, change.
Yeah.
As, like, somebody might walk through the door and say, this is how I am today.
Yes.
And that can change.
Absolutely.
And, like, being prepared to be able to, like, not necessarily hold it, but just allow it to be
yes.
in the space.
Yeah.
And that's...
Because that changed the dynamic for them and for you for the day.
Yeah.
And you've
yeah.
got to work with that, haven't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. And that's, like, been, I think, in a lot of my work. And it wasn't just, like, an overnight flip or a switch.
Mm.
It's like I have learned a lot from, being working with different practitioners.
Mm.
At the moment, I'm working on a show at the Almeida Theatre in London.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I've been working on since about the middle of last year, but kind of more intensely since February this year. We've got some performances next month at the Almeida. There's a cast of 62.
Okay, amazing. Yeah.
And
what's the show?
The show is called 81 Life.
Okay.
And the like the central question around it is, what does it mean to live a fulfilled life? And it's been created and devised with writer Rihanna Alube and the 62 cast members.
Wow. Yeah.
So that in itself has taken time, care,
organic,
a lot of listening for Rihanna to be able to pull out all of the voices and the stories of those people and then to shape it into something theatrical.
Yeah.
But the only way we can like work with all of those people is by having a huge amount of resource of like time, money and people to support all of these participants that we're working with.
Yeah,
One of the organisations is Cardboard Citizens. So they work with people who've experienced of homelessness and poverty.
Yeah, of course.
And it's they're an organisation that work through creativity and the arts and theatre. But there's no but. As it's the service users and members and participants, people have different names for how they want to call the people who are involved in the work. But they're all vulnerable in very, very many different ways.
Yes.
And the only way it feels possible for them to access this work is through a lot of support.
Yeah.
A lot of like listening, a lot of
patience
kindness,
and compassion.
Mm.
And a lot of like setting up containers which have particular like rules or ways of being, like ways of abiding to structures.
Mm. Yes, yeah.
And it takes a lot of resource to be able to bring all of these people together in this way.
Mm.
But what a great model.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Because this can be, this sounds quite unique, and to be able to set this up and be able to cost it and to be able to evaluate it, to stick it out there, and now say, different theatre, this is a different model of theatre, you don't have to be this prescriptive, this can be an option as well.
Yeah, it's one way of doing it, and it's allowing people to access the arts that maybe feel that, oh, it's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's never something I've even thought about. You know, we've got we've got people in the production who've never stepped foot on a stage before.
Amazing, really
amazing. It's about like guiding them through this journey as well.
I love that. 62 of them, did you say?
Yeah,
and they've all stuck with it for the whole time.
But like a couple of people that have dropped off for like various different reasons.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Because it's a huge commitment
it is
for
huge,
them. For a lot of them, it's from February all the way right through to August.
Mm.
For a lot of them, it's meeting once a week.
Mm.
We have three different groups that meet once a week. There are about like 20 people in each group. And then once a month, the entire 62 we've been meeting.
It works well.
And it's incredible because the age range is from like 18 to 80.
Mm-hmm.
And just
wonderful.
The beautiful like intergenerational conversations that happen.
Yeah.
And just like seeing people in the same space that, you know, generally like are kind of isolated into their own
They
groups.
Might be at the bus stop together, but that's about it. Or, you know, walking past.
Yeah.
On the street.
But collaboration on that, on that scale, I think is pretty awesome.
And the things I'm learning from the other facilitators, that's like it's like a continuous like professional development.
Absolutely.
About how to just be in space together, how to, you know, hold different people's needs, conversations, wishes, and at the same time like driving something forward towards a common goal. It feels like lovely. It's like ooh, I'm still like stretching into stuff.
Yeah.
It's also a world where I never imagined myself 20 years ago, where it's like graduated from college. And it's like, here I am on the West End stage in Fame the Musical. This is my life. This is my trajectory. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And like, particularly like when you're trained at that place, Lane Theatre Arts, where I am now probably isn't the trajectory that like they imagine for you know, a lot of their
their
students. Because it would be train as a professional performer, and then if you're going to go into something creative, it'll be in commercial theatre.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There'll be an expectation that you'll follow the trajectory.
Yeah.
But this sounds incredibly wholesome and generous and accommodating and supportive of proper community, as opposed to, well, these are the people, these are performers, you're not a performer, you're just a person on the street.
Yeah.
No, bring them in, the wealth that these people
That's
will
have. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds
will be astonishingly
so
rich. Yeah, exactly.
And joyous.
Lovely word.
Yeah. They're just these, like, honest bodies and honest stories.
There we go,
just,
there's
like,
the word.
It's
There's
not being told that you have to like you have to like stand in a particular way or just like emote in a particular way or you know, it's very, it feels like very immediate.
Yeah.
And also like the beautiful thing of, and like which I talked about earlier, it's the transference of ownership from like this is something like we're molding with you, and it's when like they take it and go, yeah, this is mine now.
Yeah, and you can see your thumbprints on it.
Mm. And when they say, no, 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 the prop doesn't go there, it goes here. You go, thanks.
Yeah,
great.
That's so nice.
Mm. All those little things where you go, it's yours now, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's the magical
thing.
Where do
you want it to go?
Mm.
Yeah.
And that happens whether it's in like a production of that size or like on the Olympic ceremonies as well, just when, you know, the cast of 1500 are just really owning it. It's a similar thing because you've been able to like talk to the individual and go, what is it, the thing that you need to get to the next bit, to be able to like shine, to be able to really like, is it a more comfortable pair of shoes? Mm-hmm. Is it like your headpiece isn't fitting properly? Because very often people with no experience of theatre don't realise that they can ask for something to like feel a bit smoother, softer, kinder to themselves. Mm. And
you were like the, offering them the WD-40, if you like. that lubrication to get something like easy and seamless. And it doesn't have to be hard and jaggy. I know I use these terms, but to me that's how it would feel if I was directed by yourself.
Mm. It doesn't, I mean, I don't say this lightly, it doesn't have to be violent. Like, there's a lot of violence in theatre.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And a lot of it is very, like, subversive.
Sure.
And, like, manipulative. Manipulative.
Yeah, it is.
And that is violent.
Yeah.
And it, like, scars people, like, so much that they just leave the industry.
Of course.
Many
an autobiography has been written about, you know.
Yeah.
The theatre is really difficult for anyone with caring responsibilities.
Mm.
It makes it impossible for you to have a thriving, successful career and care for somebody.
Mm.
That's huge.
Yeah,
that's
it is huge. Really huge. Yeah. And it was only a few years ago where there was a musical, was it 42nd Street, which was in the West End, and they did a job share between two mothers.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Two performers, two mothers.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
It was revolutionary.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It was like, of course it makes sense. Of course it can happen. The only barrier is cost.
Yeah.
Because that means like double the costumes, double the rehearsal time. It's, it all adds.
Mm.
But
the facilitation of that all of a sudden opens up another doorway of we don't have to do it the prescribed way.
Yeah.
We can do something different.
And the modelling of it as well. You know, like young people as they're like coming into the industry, they go, oh, they can do that.
Yeah.
Maybe I can be a parent,
yes,
or maybe I
can
look after my mum and still work.
Yeah.
It's just another way of doing it. And you can't see you can't be what you can't see. So if it doesn't exist, how can you even like dream that it exists?
Absolutely.
Particularly in an industry that's so like challenging and difficult already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this is why this pioneering work is so important.
I don't think it's pioneering though.
Yeah,
lots of people are doing it. It's just not very like public and like public facing.
Oh.
As in like people are doing it in small like charitable organisations all around this town anyway.
Sure.
Like it may not be like front facing like big theatre like the Almeida, but like this stuff is being done by the people and will continue to be done by the people.
It's how community works.
Yeah.
It's how, well, at the end of the day, it's how Andran works, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's how all of those little things that we take for granted work, but to actually take it onto a West End stage and make that
happen. We're just putting it into like a big like a big container and a big structure, but
shining
it's happening.
A light on it.
And it's happening on a smaller scale as well. But it's like in that theatre, it's down to the creative ambition of Danny Parr, who's the head of the creative learning there at the Almeida. This is the third production I've worked on with the Almeida, with like a community production. And each one has been hugely ambitious. Like there's this thing around like community work that it needs to be patronizing and basic and, you know, speak to the lowest common denominator.
Yes, because they don't understand this discipline or they've never done this, therefore let's keep it in a dumbed down.
That makes it easy
access.
But the insulting, underestimating human ability to
And it's it's her drive and her ambition to make like this work as not as professional, but as of like a high standard as the main stage work. That
good storytelling, right? Just bringing out those stories and allowing co-authorship and ownership over that. That's a big
deal, isn't it? When you think about it, giving ownership to. You know, when you're always used to seeing the credits, this person's responsible and this person, and they get all the spotlight, but actually giving that over to the actual community that you were. Actually, they did most of this.
It was this lot, actually.
And we facilitated the space and the cost, and we got the funding, and but look what can happen when you leave. It's a bit like letting kids direct. John was saying earlier about, you know, the kids directed the parents for the last day of school. And I love that. I love give it over. Yeah. It's just, it says a lot of, it's a lot of trust and creativity.
Yeah.
And so it's not all about the control of the wielder of the power.
And then I guess so many surprises can come out of that. And so many weird, strange things and funny things and... Sad. All of the things can come out of that.
Once
you've made the frame for it and and the space for it.
And it's when, people just like, we call it like making offers. Like, rather than just like the words say this on the page. What is the thing that you could do that could bring that to life? And a lot of like the rehearsing that we do before we rehearse the play is about like playing. And encouraging play and like, what does it mean to try something and fail beautifully? So that when we come to like pick up the play script, you go, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. I'm going to offer this up. It might not help with the storytelling in this moment, but I'm just going to give it a go. And then something might come out where you go, that's incredible.
But it helps with the creativity. Any of us, we get out of the habit of playing because we're adults and we think, oh, adults don't play. My God, if only we could encourage adults to play. There's so much creativity is all, you know, because kids don't struggle with creativity, do they? They make things up on the spot.
They just flow.
It just happens because they trust it.
There's no, like, end point. No. You just, like, watch a child of play. They just keep going.
And they don't finish until they're exhausted, and you're sort of, you know, got into a box of Chardonnay in the kitchen with straw, and saying, I can't take it anymore, and they're going, but I still want to play, Mummy, I'm still here. And look, I could do this. Yes, you can, darling. You're quite right.
Oh, look, it's 7 o'clock.
Go to bed. Get in the bath. Let's do the downtime. But it's true. Children don't. They're inexhaustible because their creativity is just going and going. Adults lose that ability because they think, oh, playing's for children.
We unlearn it, I think.
We're conditioned out of it, aren't we? Behave yourself at your age, all those stupid statements.
Go out and earn a living.
Oh, God. Grow up. All those. And this is what I love about this is the fact that people can get out there and just trust themselves.
And what comes out. The beautiful thing about this project is that it's all for free for the participants.
That's really good.
And they get some like food and travel expenses at session they come to.
Fantastic.
And that's like, so money is a barrier for a lot of people. And so that's one barrier you can just take away and say, you can be part of this. It's for free. And we'll give you some expenses.
We'll help you get there.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't know what the barriers are until somebody... Or, not that they say, but like you start to open up a conversation, and it can sometimes be like a long and gentle conversation,
mm-hmm. yeah.
where you're trying to find like clues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. And go,
exactly.
Here we go. So you've got three kids and listening. There's nobody else at home to look after them. Do you think childcare might help to be able to get you to this session? And they might say, oh, maybe like once every fortnight. And like on the other weeks, my mum can look after the kids. There's all this stuff. Oh, like yeah. you're trying to go, what's the thing that can help you get here?
I love that.
And kind of then take what, like the magic here back into your real life.
Because
it doesn't end when you leave.
No, you pay it forward.
Yeah.
And they would pay it forward in their, in because they've been given that option. And I love that so much.
And all of that stuff, like, yeah. isn't quantifiable, isn't measurable. You can't go, well, that moment equals X amount of money in ticket sales.
Mm. No, you can't, no.
It's so difficult to measure.
I understand.
And so even though, like, on this production, we're making it for such a long period of time, they do four shows at the end
mm-hmm.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
And... that's mainly because they are community participants. This is not their full-time job. They have full-time lives outside of this.
Yeah.
So it's good to have a goal to work towards.
Mm.
That really helps on, I think, anything that you're working on. Mm. But there, yeah, a few performances for that reason.
Yeah.
But it...
I've just had a thought.
Go on.
The next one you do, have a documentary team, and I mean a small documentary team running alongside it, if you're not already doing that,
yeah.
because that gets you all of that evidence, because you're talking about it beautifully, you're illustrating everything that is happening,
yeah.
and you know that because you're having these conversations, if they were filmed and archived. Ready for the next one to say, this might not be quantifiable in this respect, so it's not necessarily equates to a bum on a seat, but it goes into the community in a different way. So you just need somebody who's going to ask some questions and run a camera and just
there's that, but like there's a lot of really good evaluations done
exactly
like throughout, so
yeah, oh, so you do
like
have it.
When we did the Hero's Journey last year, we built in evaluation from the outset before like ever stepping into any planning stages. There was an evaluation framework which we like created in collaboration with other of the people working on it, both for us as like the producing creative team and also for other participants. So that because it can be something that can be very easily like forgotten about or kind of tacked on.
Oh no, they're really important.
And
it's
really important.
It's the most important thing when you're running anything in that way to get your evaluation actually embedded right from the beginning.
And the moment's gone as well. They're trying to remember back to how they felt if you're doing it later on. So,
it's an ongoing calibration. We're always measuring.
And we made a really gorgeous case study as well. We had this filmmaker, Joseph Lynn, come in and... he's brilliant. He's got like a gorgeous eye, this like beautiful like human eye for like capturing. He like he took some like rehearsal footage and some of like performance footage, and then he did some interviews with everybody, like the cast and the team that were working on it, just to talk about their experience of it. And that in itself was like really captured.
Oh yeah, that's a proper
the stories
nugget.
And the moments, and that's. That's beautiful.
Mm.
It's like a beautiful case study because also like the money for that is it came from the Arts Council. It was like it was a funded production.
That's what they were going to want, isn't it? The Arts Council.
It could not have happened without funding. So
that's the Hero's Journey you're speaking about there.
And then the Almeida production is a mixture of different funding pots, private and public. Because unlike the Hero's Journey, the project isn't funded by ticket sales. Yes, there are some ticket sales. It's like a minute percentage of what a project like that costs.
So how do you feel about St Leonard's and your home now?
Because we need to bring you back to the now.
Bring me back to the seagulls. I love it. It's like the place I didn't know that I needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that I like craved and needed community so much. This is like both through my work and from like the ease of making friends down here. I remember within the first few weeks there was a lot of like, oh, I'm going to meet some friends on the beach for a swim. Do you want to go for a swim? Then you go for a swim and they say, oh, let's make a WhatsApp group and we can like meet and swim every now and then. Yeah. And that just like, that was the beginning of what it's like to live down here.
It's true. Yeah. And you bump into someone once and then you're like, oh, hi again. Oh, hi again.
Phone numbers. Yeah. Let's have tea. It's an automatic thing, isn't it?
This is not a bad thing, but I can't step out of the house and walk down the street without like bumping into somebody, whether it's like somebody I know just to say hi to, or somebody is like a really good friend. I know a lot of people in this town. Like my brother came to visit last summer and we just took a walk along the lower prom. And after about 10 minutes, his partner said, you're like the Lord Mayor of St. Leonard's. It's like every like 50 meters, you say hello to somebody.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, this is just my life.
Yeah. It is.
And I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. Like,
but it's friendly like that, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's super friendly.
I love it. I really do.
Those connections are huge for, you know, all the things in my head, like encountering isolation, da-da-da-da-da. But it's true, like those little interactions and the smiley faces and the people that you recognise and see every day. It just makes you feel connected.
Yeah, it does that. And, like, it shifts something in you. You might have, like, had a shitty email. And then you just step outside of the house and just that like interaction with somebody just flips.
Yeah. Someone's pleased to see you.
Yeah.
They're pleased to see you. They really are. And it's like, oh, and you think, oh, that's nice. Even if you go out in disguise, which I often do to get a job done.
Exactly.
An errand and message run, as my grandmother would say. I'm on my messages. It's accommodating. Well, we're very lucky to have you, you know. I'm aware of time because you had to be somewhere, so we're going to have to wrap this up. But I want to know...
time.
Last orders. This has been fascinating.
We're going to have to have you again, I'm afraid. You're going to have to come back.
Part two.
Because there's so much I want to ask you about Ireland and all the other things you're doing.
Absolutely.
So we will have you back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're a rich scene.
I've never heard that.
That's a great one. When you're mining, if you find a rich scene, that means there's something very precious.
Oh.
You're dirty in that t-shirt.
I'm a rich scene.
You heard it here. Darling, we're going to cheers you.
Okay.
And thank you so much. Cheers. Our town has so much plenty and more plenty because it has you, Dara.
Oh.
O'Leary in our town.
Dara O'Plenty.
Dara O'Plenty.
Oh, Dara O'Plenty.
Welcome to the family.